Well, that is not the sermon this morning. I don't know where it is, but that's not it. Want to talk about termites today. I know you're wondering what in the world. Well, that is not the sermon this morning. I don't know where it is, but that's not it. Want to talk about termites today. I know you're wondering what in the world has gotten into him. Termites. Termites are destructive little animals, little insects. They will destroy what is stately and beautiful. You can find them in the woods. You can find them in the country. You can find them in the city. They are everywhere. And the reason why they are so destructive is because they work undercover. They work out of sight. They strike at the very foundation of a home or a building. Now, there's been some research done, and because of it, thankfully, you can have your house sprayed and protect yourself from these insects that would destroy. But even then, because they are so persistent, even then, we still have to have our houses checked and treated, because if we do not, they will destroy the very foundation of a beautiful home. But then, there are things very similar to these termites that destroy our physical buildings. I call them temple termites because they can and will destroy the very essence of the truth. And what could be a very active and very vibrant church, these temple termites can destroy. And just like the real insect termite, very often they work in small groups and then they spread, and very often they work out of sight until their work is progressed, and before you know it, these temple termites can destroy a very awesome church. For that reason, God hates them. That's true. The God of love, the God of grace, the God of mercy, the Bible tells us, hates these temple termites because they are sins that destroy the truth. Listen as Dustin reads to us this morning from Proverbs chapter 6 and verse 16. Listen to the seven things that God hates. And then we're going to talk about these temple termites.
There are six things the Lord hates, seven that are detestable to him: haughty eyes, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked schemes, feet that are quick to rush into evil, a false witness who pours out lies, A person who stirs up conflict in the community.
So let's talk about these temple termites, these things that God hates. Now, I'll tell you right now, if it's something God hates, you can be sure that we need to avoid it. So what are these things? Well, the first thing he says is that God hates a proud look. Perhaps one of man's greatest faults is that we have often thought of ourselves more highly than we ought to think. In Jeremiah chapter 13, verse 15, there we are commanded, do not be proud. We go all the way back to the Garden of Eden and find out that right there is where Satan began to use this tactic to try to separate God and man. When he told Adam and Eve, he said, the only reason why God doesn't want you to eat of that tree in the middle of the garden is because you'll be like a god. You'll be like him. And he doesn't want you to be like him. And so Satan appeals to man's vanity to be something that he is not. And as a result, of course, sin came into the world and Adam and Eve were banished from the Garden of Eden. I think about the people in the days of Noah, of whom it was said that the thoughts and the intents of their heart were evil continually. They thought that they didn't need God. Does that remind you of anybody? How'd that work out for them? Not very well. Because God caused the great flood to come and destroyed everyone except Noah. Because he found grace in the eyes of the Lord. I think about the people that tried to build the Tower of Babel. Let's just shut God out of our lives. Let's build us a tower. And we'll just walk up the steps and we'll go to heaven. We don't need God. Does that remind you of anybody? How'd that work out for them? Not too good. Because God destroyed the Tower of Babel. And I see how that we in our nation today are building a Tower of Babel. We're saying, God, we don't need you in our schools. God, we don't need you in our laws. God, we don't need you in our courts. And after a while, God is not going to be there for us. And our Tower of Babel is going to be destroyed. You can count on it. But what about this proud look that God hates? Well, Paul said to Timothy that it will be a part of our age. In 2 Timothy 3 and verse 2, this know also that in the last days perilous times shall come. For men will be lovers of themselves, boasters, and proud. Those times, my brother, are here. I think about how that the rich farmer in Luke chapter 12 thought that he didn't need God. He said to himself, I've built greater barns for all of the things that I have done. You remember what God said to him? Sure you do. He said, thou fool, this night shall thy soul be required of thee. And then who shall all of this be that you've gathered together? You better not leave God out of your life. It's a foolish thing to do. In Proverbs 28 and verse 25, there again the wise man Solomon said, he that is of a proud heart stirs up strife. That's the reason why God hates it so. When we try to exalt ourselves above God, God hates it, and it will not go unpunished. James 4 and verse 6, God resists the proud. Proverbs 15:25, the Lord shall destroy the house of the proud. Isaiah 2 and verse 12, for the day of the Lord of hosts shall be upon everyone that is proud and lofty, and upon everyone that is lifted up, and he shall be brought low. God hates a proud look. We're going to have to go through these quickly this morning in order to get them in. I wish any one of these would be a lesson within itself. But just remember, number one, God hates a proud look. Number two, it says that God hates a lying tongue. Perhaps God hates lies because God is truth. God cannot lie, cannot lie. When God tells us something, you can know that it is absolute truth. Again, Proverbs 12 and verse 22, lying lips are an abomination unto the Lord. We've heard all our life the old saying that honesty is the best policy. Well, for the Christian, honesty is the only policy. We are told as Christians, we are to let our yes be yes and our no to be no. One of the things that God so encourages us and commands us throughout the Word is not to lie. One of the things that we read about lying is found in Revelation 21 and verse 8. And there's where God lists a lot of bad things. Whoremongers, idolaters, sorcerers, murderers. And then he says, watch this now, all liars shall have their place in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone. Now, we've done a good job about dividing our sins up into little and big, and especially when it comes to lying. We've got little white lies, we've got little gray lies, we've got little half lies, half truths, and then there's the black lie. And really, only the black lie is the one that you have to worry about. Well, that may be man's summation of lying, but it is not God's. In fact, God tells us that all liars shall have their place. Psalms 119 and 163, I hate and abhor lying, God says. And Ephesians 4 and verse 25 is where in the New Testament, God admonishes us, put away lying. Speak every man truth with his neighbor. Colossians 3 and verse 9, lie not to one another. I've often wondered, what if God dealt with liars today like he did with Ananias and Sapphira? You remember that little story, don't you? How that Ananias and Sapphira lied about the land that they sold. And whenever they told that lie, God struck them dead. I suspect that at least that next week, there wasn't a whole lot of lying went on in the church. Don't you imagine? But how long before it wore off? Nevertheless, it is the same today as it was then in Acts 5 and verse 4. Whenever Ananias and Sapphira were told, you hadn't just lied unto man, you lied unto God. Now they told the lie to a man, to Peter. But they were told, you don't just lie to one another. When we lie to one another, we lie to God. So, something that we certainly need to keep in mind, God hates a lying tongue. And in Revelation 21 and verse 27, tells us that if we do that, we'll forfeit our place in heaven. And there shall in no wise enter into the holy city, heaven, anything that makes a lie. God hates a proud look. God hates a liar. And it says, number three, that God hates those that shed innocent blood. Maybe the reason why God hates that so much is because it's something very precious to Him. He made us out of the dust of the earth. We're dirt. But we're not just a handful of dirt. Because when God made man, watch this now. He breathed into man's nostrils the breath of life, and he became a living soul. One of the reasons why we cannot take another person's life and murder is because we cannot restore it. Only God can give life. We have no right to take it. Now, there are times whenever we have to protect our family. This does not mean we cannot protect our family. It does not mean we cannot protect our freedom. What God is talking about here is that when we in vengeance or jealousy or for whatever reason decide that we can end someone else's life. And the Bible tells us that God hates someone that does that. Again, because we are the shrine for God's Spirit. God breathed the Spirit of God in our lives, and we became a living soul. And I think about today how that human life is, to many, means so little. I'm appalled, as you are, of those who would walk into a school and kill children. I am disgusted with someone who would walk into a church and just open fire on the worshipers there. It makes me sick in my gut. For someone to simply take the liberty to set off a bomb that would kill and maim people. And even though they do it as a suicide bomber and take their own life. For God, that person obviously is going to be separated from God, but I feel that they'll have a harsh punishment from God Almighty. God gives life. We have no right to take it. But you say, well, man, I'm not a murderer. I don't have to worry about that. Well, let's just think about that for just a minute. In 1 John chapter 3 and verse 15, it says there, whosoever hateth his brother is a murderer. There are a lot of ways that you can kill. The physical body, of course, stab somebody, shoot somebody. But have we ever thrust somebody, take away their good name? Have we ever, with pride or envy or malice or hatred, which are weapons of murder in the sight of God, have we ever done that? Have we ever taken a shot at someone's reputation? Have we ever told lies about them? Are we a gossiper and a whisperer? There are a lot of ways that one can shed innocent blood. God hates them all. And in the fourth place, it says that God hates a heart that devises wicked imaginations or has wicked plans. In Proverbs 4, verse 23, it said, "There keep the heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life." Here, the Lord is talking about a heart that's wicked. He hates a wicked heart. In Matthew 15, verse 19, it says, "For out of the heart proceeds evil thoughts." You are as you think in your heart. If you think evil in your heart, you are an evil person, even though you may present this facade of being a kind and thoughtful person. After a while, that evil will come out. In Matthew 5 and verse 8, God there gives a blessing to the pure heart. "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." God hates a wicked heart. A heart that will do wicked things, Jeremiah says. Jeremiah 17 verse 9. That the heart is a deceitful thing and a desperately wicked. And who can know it? The one thing that Christianity tries to do is to change our what? Heart. That's what it's all about. That's what this Jesus thing is all about. Changing our heart. And we can be plunged into some water, but it not change our heart. And it doesn't mean very much. Nothing, in fact. Peter tells us that baptism doth now save us, not the putting away the filth of the flesh, but the answer of a good conscience or a good heart to God. They're not little sins all out on the outside of your skin that something magical in this water back here washes off. It's not the putting away the filth of the flesh. It's not washing off something on the outside. But it's the answer of a good heart to God. Changing our heart. And that's what is all about. That's what God is all about. That's what the Master is all about. Changing our heart. When he preached the great Sermon on the Mount, he said, "Thou hast heard it said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thy enemy. But I'm telling you, change your heart. Don't just love those that love you, but love your enemy and pray for those that despitefully use you. Thou hast heard it said, if a man compel you to go a mile, go with him too." He was saying, change the way you do things. by changing your heart. And that's what Christianity is. That's what maturing as a Christian is all about. Is this changing our heart. God hates a heart that's wicked. But then it says that God hates feet that are swift to run to mischief. Why do you watch the car races? You watch them to see who wins, or you watch them to see who has a wreck? Most of the time, if we'll admit it, we watch the races because we want to see if there's going to be any wrecks. Well, there are a lot of people that watch people that very way. And it's wrong. In Proverbs 4 and verse 23, again, the wise man Solomon talks about having this kind of life, looking for the bad and the evil in people, looking for the troubles instead of looking for the good and trying to help someone. In Galatians 6 and verse 1, Paul says there, if a brother's overtaken in a fault, you are spiritual, restore such a one. In the spirit of meekness and love, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. But we're often inclined to go and put it on Facebook or Twitter, or talk about it to our neighbor instead of going to our brother. And that's wrong. In Proverbs 24, verse 8, it says there, that he that deviseth to do evil shall be called a mischievous person. I can't imagine the master saying to Peter when he asked him, how many times should I forgive my brother? Seven times? Saying, no, you don't have to forgive him at all. Just go tell everybody about it. Or I can't imagine the Lord saying on the cross, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And the God saying, no, we're not going to forgive them. We're not going to forget this forever. Feet that are swift to running to mischief. Then number 6. A false witness that speaks lies. This is one of the very first commandments that God gave the children of Israel. In Exodus chapter 20 and verse 16. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. We see that in our courts today. You tell the truth. You raise your hand and do you promise to tell the truth and the whole truth and nothing but the truth? Because in our courts, they're not dealing with I think so or hearsay or maybe or probably or perhaps. They want the facts. You tell the truth. Again, God doubles up on this thing about lying. That is important to God, I'm telling you, people. And it's important in our lives. You just don't bear false witness. You try to be honest. You try to be good. You try to be right. One man said, great minds discuss ideas. Mediocre minds discuss events. Small minds discuss people. In Psalms 101 and verse 5, whosoever privately slanders his neighbor, him will I cut off. James 4 verse 11, speak not evil against one another. Someone has said if all the sins could be put in two piles, half of them would be sins of the tongue. And I don't doubt that to be a truth. In Psalms 52 and verse 2, it talks about the tongue that deviseth mischief is like a sharp razor. In Proverbs 16 and verse 27, an ungodly man diggeth up evil, and in his lips there is burning like a fire. In Proverbs 16 and verse 28, a forward man soweth strife, and a whisperer separates a lot of friendships. Proverbs 18 and verse 21, death and life are in the power of the tongue. James 1 and verse 26, if any man among you seems to be religious and doesn't bridle his tongue, this man's religion is vain. I don't think we understand that we can go to hell because we're a gossiper. But it is a sin that God hates and will not have us around Him if that's what we are. Proverbs 26 and verse 20, where there is no wood, the fire goes out. And where there is no talebearer, the strife ceases. Get off of Facebook. Get off of Twitter. Quit talking about your neighbor. Quit talking about your brother. If he's in trouble, don't talk about him. Go help him. Matthew 12, verse 36 and 37. But I say unto you that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give an account of in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. But then finally and quickly, God says that He abhors. It's an abomination to Him, anyone that sows discord among the brethren. And I can understand why. Someone that tries to destroy or undermine the church that God sent His Son to die for, to purchase. You don't think He would hate someone that did that? You don't try to destroy what God has built. You don't try to destroy the church. People, this is your home. That's why we call it your home church. This is why we call it a family. And you don't hurt your family. I know me and brother, we used to fuss and fight, but you let somebody else pick on one of us, and we stood to the toe for each other. Toe to toe. Because it's your brother. You remember when the little boys that back in the Depression years that were orphaned? True story. Had nowhere to go. Had no one to take care of them. So they heard of a place up in Nebraska called Boys Town. Now, two little boys, orphaned, nowhere to go. Nebraska was a long, long way away. But what do? So they started out to Boys Town, Nebraska. They hopped freights, they hitchhiked, they walked, they ate out of garbage cans, they begged, they stole. And after a long and arduous journey, they finally found themselves a mile away from Boys Town. Then Boys Town was down a dusty road off of the main road. Now, city's growing up around Boys Town. Nevertheless, their journey was almost over. But the little brother was weak and sick, and he couldn't go on. His big brother urged him, "We're right almost there," but he couldn't go on. So So his brother said, climb on my back and I'll carry you. So his little brother climbed on his back and he walked that last mile carrying him. He walked into Boys Town and one of the boys ran and got one of the priests who was in charge of Boys Town. And he came out and he said to him, and you probably remember what he asked. He said, isn't he heavy? If you remember what he asked, you remember what the boy said. He ain't heavy, mister. He's my brother. The Lord hates anyone who tries to destroy the family of God. Now, there are seven very, very harsh sins, like a termite, can destroy that what is beautiful. And God hates it. If you this morning have not obeyed the gospel, if you're not serving the God who is a God of love and grace and mercy, and that's what I love to preach about, because he is. Loved you enough to give your son, his son, to die for you. Jesus loved you enough to die. Gracious enough to give you away, even in our weaknesses, even in our frailties, a way to be strong and a Christian.